Blog Talk Radio.
So Jose's off, and I'm here alone. So is that sort of like when the parents are away, the children will play? I guess we'll just have to find out, because we have a bunch of different guests with us tonight. Let's party, like we used to do. Talk Radio on the air right now. I am Randy Zelia, courtesy of backsportspage.com, Real Sports Talk Radio, of course, on Facebook. Find Backsportspage on Facebook as well. Find us on Twitter at Backsportspage, and you can find me at Randy BSB. A lot of news going on in the sports world right now. I want to remind everybody about the scheduling here on Blog Talk Radio, Backsportspage Network. We have every Monday from 12 to 12:30, Talking Sports with Mike T. Always a great, great show with Mike Tramatazzi. Mike Tramatazzi will join us tonight at 9:45. We're going to talk a little NBA about some of the moves that were going on, especially the introduction of Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce to the Brooklyn media and the Nets faithful. Interesting to see how that whole thing is going to play out in Brooklyn this upcoming season. Also tonight, we also have Bobby Blackjack from I-95 Radio. He's going to come on and talk a little NFL football with us, get us ready for the NFL season. We're going to talk a little bit about Victor Cruz and his situation signing the new contract and then being more vocal. You know, Victor Cruz was always that silent guy, always very quiet, but with what he did and how he was able to make a difference. And Victor Cruz is all of a sudden being lashing out about his contract and thinking about the George Zimmerman whole situation. And, man, I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure if I really like that from Victor Cruz. So we're going to jump into that as well. Really also want to talk about where this is where we're really going to start tonight. And we're going to jump in head first, baseball all-star game this past week. Awesome game. Really love Mariano Rivera. He's getting his ovation. And Derek Jeter's situation as well with the Yankees. But we're going to start with the All-Star game. Pitcher's duel. I had a problem with Matt Harvey. And I'm not saying because I'm a Yankee fan. Let's take my fandom for a team out of this. Let's take the fact that I'm a Yankee fan out of this. I'm not sure if I buy into the whole Matt Harvey thing. I liked Jimmy Fallon, what he did. Was having Matt Harvey going around to New York and asking fans if they ever heard of Matt Harvey. And, it was pretty funny the way fans didn't even know they were talking to Matt Harvey. And then Matt Harvey was like, yeah, by the way, what advice do you have for Matt Harvey? You shouldn't do this. All right, thanks, man. Harvey's a different animal, and I don't know if this is a one-hit wonder, if this is really going to be a full-time superstar in baseball. It's a guy that the Mets can build a future around. And great personality. I don't know. There's just something about him that I'm not really buying into yet. I'd love to get your opinion. 760-283-0846. 760-283-0846. Is Matt Harvey for real? That's something that we really have to talk about. You know, is Matt Harvey for real? I'm not sure. If Jose was here, he'd be yelling at me. And then the situation with him hitting Robinson Cano, it was a freak thing. Did he mean to do it? Who knows? Do I really buy that Matt Harvey is going, like I said, going to be a superstar? Whether he just, listen, he's having a great season, but to see a flash in the pan. And that's where I'm looking for Mets fans. To step up here to the plate and let me know where they are. 760-283-0846. 760-283-0846. Is he a flash in the pan? We're going to talk second half predictions in a few minutes. Sarah Gordon's going to join us as well. Again, Mike Trematazzi, in about 10 minutes to talk a little NBA with us. And he can also plug his show. Love to hear from everybody here about the Matt Harvey situation, whether he is a star or whether he's not a star, whether he's just a flash in the pan. Also, other news, if you're a Yankee fan, you're not happy to hear that Derek Jeter back on the 15-day disabled list, available to come off next Saturday. Yeah, they rushed him back. Let's. I don't care what Brian Cashman comes out and says, or anybody comes out and plays it off. Jeter rushed his way back. They rushed Jeter back. He wasn't ready. Wasn't able to really do this. Jeter, listen, the glory days of the Yankees are over. No, Jose and I sat here a week ago and said to everybody who was listening, the Yankee fans have been spoiled. The Yankees fans have been spoiled. If you ask me why they're spoiled, since 1994, they've missed the playoffs. Well, 1995, they've missed the playoffs once. In 2008. So you're telling me that right now, the reason why people aren't showing up to the stands, again, I made a comparison to the Atlanta Braves, and people misunderstood what I was saying, that you can't compare this to the Atlanta Braves. Yes, you can. It's the sense of entitlement that Yankee fans seem to have right now about their team, that we just, you know, going to the playoffs is a given. Hey, you're six games back from the Red Sox right now. You're not entitled to anything right now. Okay? The dynasty of the Yankees was over a long time ago. This is not a dynasty anymore. Okay? The dynasty went out a long time ago. I'd love to hear from you. 760-283-0846. It's going to take, you know, but hopefully Mike Trematazzi will be able to jump on and we'll bring this up too. I fairly believe, like we just said, the Yankees dynasty is over. The dynasty was from 1994-95 to 2001. They became a mainstay in the playoffs. Broadcasters like Michael Kay and John Sterling, Susan Waltman, and other broadcasters in the New York area are not understanding why attendance has dropped. I'm telling you why attendance is dropping. When the stars aren't on the field, people are not coming to the games. Listen, last season was the first season where playoff tickets were available. Okay, when was the last time Yankee fans could say playoff tickets were available? That's incredibly difficult to fully understand. You're telling me the great New York Yankees couldn't sell out playoff games. Now let's forget about the fact that the team struggled. Playoff games. Again, the Atlanta Braves went through the same thing. They became a mainstay. They became a mainstay in the playoffs, and they just didn't win championships. So I'm waiting for someone to tell me something else that makes total sense with the New York Yankees playing like they are. But the fact that they're only six games back is brilliant and is beautiful. I'm really very excited to see that they're still alive and they're still having an opportunity to be there. And if they missed the playoffs this year, they had no one to look after themselves, because like the A-Rod situation aside, which we're going to get into in a few minutes, the A-Rod issue aside, that team's not getting any younger. And there's, listen, baseball needs an influx of young talent. We're still talking about Derek Jeter. He's 37, 38 years old. we're talking about Alex Rodriguez, who's way past his prime. Okay, look at the Red Sox. The Red Sox got rid of all their big contracts last season, and they're playing great baseball. They're the best record in baseball. So are you telling me right now that the Yankees should be ahead of the Red Sox or are better than the Red Sox? You can't tell me that. Nobody can tell me that. The Red Sox are a better baseball team. The Red Sox are a better baseball team than the Yankees are right now. Right now, actually in Boston, bottom of the seventh, Red Sox 4, Yankees 2. You put Jeter on the injured list again. Teixeira's been out. Granderson's been in and out of the lineup. Cano's banged up. A-Rod's not coming back until the beginning of next week. So what are we talking about here? Why would you pay good money to go out and see the Yankees right now? And this game, and the team is still 6 games out. Great pitching by Pettitte. Great pitching by Sabathia. Nova. This isn't a good team. So, again, are we shocked? We shouldn't be. I don't know. I'll go to get a Red Sox perspective. You know, the Yankees have been doing a great job, but listen, the sense of entitlement of the Yankee fan is amazing to me. I'm a firm believer right now that the Yankees are in huge, huge trouble. And as far as Jeter is concerned, we might be talking about an end of one of the greatest careers in baseball. So it's another topic for another night. As far as the Mets are concerned, probably one of the most exciting under 500 teams we've had in baseball for years with the Mets right now. And they're fun to watch. They're not going to win many games, but they're fun to watch. What Harvey's going to do, what some of their young prospects are going to do. And it's just, what are they going to, what are they going to turn out to be? So, the Mets are fun to watch. They're going to be fun to watch. Jose and I have been talking Major League predictions for the last couple weeks, second half of the season. Like I said, Boston's the number one team in baseball. Tampa's not too far off. Love what Baltimore is. The Yankees are just old at this point. Detroit is dangerous. Cleveland is Cleveland. I don't know the fact that race is going to open up more. I think Detroit's going to put some space off the pot right now. It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen the rest of the way. We're going to be joined by Mike Tramitas in a few minutes. We're going to talk a little NBA with Mike. Jose Padilla enjoying his night off. We appreciate all the hard work Jose does. And, you know the funny thing is, too, you know, we're going to shift over to the NBA in a minute. Funny thing with the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. I loved what happened with Mariano Rivera. The fact that they played Enter Sandman and they joined him, let him have the mouth of himself and then joined him at a later point. I thought it was one of those tribute to a legend, one of those things that was one of those moments that can be a flashback to and always talked about. And I'm going to introduce our good friends from Talking Sports with Mike T, Mike Tramitas, and we welcome him onto the show. Michael, how are you tonight?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Flying solo tonight. I'm not used to going solo. I figured I'd give it a shot of being solo, and it's a little different for me. I'm not used to it.
Sometimes it's better to switch things up, get a little crazy.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's I'm giving that pause for Jose to jump in and argue with me, and he's not there.
Yeah, it's weird. So, but then again, some people would say that you're letting the show breathe. You're letting your point sink in, when in actuality, you're really not.
Well, you know what it is, though? It is, because and I'm going to bring up some of the points. I'm going to recap some of the things I've talked about. I've been a huge proponent of reality, especially when I talk with Jose. And sometimes Jose brings reality to me, or sometimes he just tries to shut me down because he feels that his opinion is more. I always feel like, you know, everyone has their opinion to have it their way, and I agree. Sometimes I feel that they're right. Sometimes I'm just not as educated in some sports. Like when it comes to the NBA, I'm much more educated than other people, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to baseball, I'm not as educated. But from watching what I saw in the All-Star game this past week, and I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off. What I saw in the All-Star game this past week is I saw Matt Harvey. Matt Harvey is a guy to me that he's either going to be the future of the Mets or this is a one-year wonder with nowhere in between. I'm trying to believe the hype with him. And I'm having, keep in mind that I'm a Yankee fan too, but I'm taking my Yankee hat off. I'm just having a hard time fully believing that Matt Harvey is going to be the next great Mets pitcher. I don't think he doesn't have the flair. It doesn't seem like he has that it factor. Does that make sense? Is that fair?
It's fair. I don't know if it's justified, though, because I think if you actually watch him, he actually gets amped for these big games. I mean, if you look back at the beginning of the year, he was facing Strasburg and the Nationals. He was pumping triple digits in the first inning in that game. And afterwards, the Terry Collins was talking about how they had to try and calm him down after the first inning. So I think it's funny. I'm the exact opposite with him. I think he has that it factor. I think he's totally into being in New York. You know, he's dating supermodels. He's on the cover of magazines. I think he's got that. I don't know if he has the. I think sometimes we necessitate the it factor as outward behavior. You know, the Jabba Chamberlain fist bump. Remember when he first came up, where he was doing pirouettes and pumping his fist and screaming into his glove. There's two ways to go about it. There's that, and then there's that confidence of, like, I'm going to utterly dominate your lineup, and there's really nothing you can do about it because I have four pitches that are top quality already at 24 years old, and that's the kind of the confidence he gives off and exudes to the team. There's a reason why Met fans always joke that until Zach Wheeler came up, there was only one out of every 5 days that they actually thought they had a chance to win a game. You know, I think there's two ways to go about it factor. I think there's the outward, external view of it, like the Jabba Chamberlain or the Nate Robinson type. And then there's the kind of not quiet, because he's really not quiet, but I think he's more internal confidence that he exudes, just that belief that, you know, he's going to completely dominate your lineup. And you saw it kind of in the All-Star game, which, I mean, I honestly only watched the first inning of the All-Star game, so I can't really tell you much about it. But, I mean, he put the first two guys on and then just pumped gas to, after he struck out Cabrera without throwing gas, he just pumped gas for the next two hitters to strike him out and get out of the inning. So, I mean, I can see what you're saying, because it is kind of a short amount of innings, you know, it's only a little over 100 and some odd innings, but they've been pretty impressive. They've been pretty impressive, I think.
I'm not saying it's been impressive, okay? That's not what I'm saying, but I'm wondering if it's going to be more than a one-year, like, what, you know, once someone comes on the scene, once you start figuring them out, it's a little different. You know, once you figure them out, then you have to see if you can do it on a consistent level. Just like Puig in Los Angeles. Is he going to be this good all the time? You don't know yet. You have to see.
I think that's something baseball needs, though. I mean, I think for the longest time, we've been, you know, conditioned that baseball is this great American game, and I don't know about you, but I have a hard time believing that based on how popular football is and how markedly more popular the NBA stars are, not necessarily the game, because I think some people still have this attitude towards basketball that it's an inner city game played by, you know, thugs, like they thought in the early 2000s. But the NBA stars are marketed, I think, do you think more people know who LeBron James and Kobe Bryant are than Alex Rodriguez?
I'm going to throw something else at you. And I'm going to counter your point with another point, and counter your question with another question. You know, you say the NBA, you know, the players are more well-known than baseball. Again, you also have to look at the marketing aspects of both teams, both leagues. The NBA is a global, you know, franchise. Not franchise, you know,
it's a global league, and
you're able to market the stars. When the Chicago Bulls had Michael Jordan, you were able to do the whole league around Jordan.
Right, now, I think,
you see what I'm saying? And Jose and I made this point to Jose last week, and this is the truth. I think each team has a different way of marketing it. Hockey has the most hardcore fan base I've ever seen, and I admire all the hockey fans because they're passionate about their sports, about their sport and their team. I have no problem with that. The National Football League markets their schedule, their teams, and the importance of a shorter season of 16 games, where every game counts. And at the end of the day, you know, you and I are both Giant fans. We're both Giant fans, and you're not rooting for Eli Manning. At the end of the day, Eli Manning can break his arm, and he won't be the starting quarterback in the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
You're rooting for the NY on the helmet. You're rooting for the guys wearing blue. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who's playing for the Giants. It matters, you know, you're marketing the franchise. The NBA is different because it comes down to players and, you know, global outlet. Baseball is about its history. So,
yeah.
Mike, let's see who's joining us on the line here. Real Sports Talk Radio, you're on with Randy and Mike T.
It's the guy that normally hosts the show with you.
Oh, see, Mike, see, this is what I'm saying. You give a guy a little bit of power, and all of a sudden he starts calling in when he wants to. Jose joining us here. Jose, we were talking about this, and we were talking about the importance, we were picking up a little bit where we left off last week, of the marketing, because we were talking about, you know, the importance of superstars and, you know, the league, the balance of the leagues. You and I both said it last week. Hockey, you have the hardcore fan base. The NFL is more of the importance of the, you know, the schedule and, you know, the marketing of the franchises. The NBA is more of the superstar and the global aspect of the game. And Major League Baseball is really about their history. And you brought up a very interesting point last week, Jose. You can expand on it a little bit. That history is what's sort of causing some of the problems that they have right now.
You know, part of the problem is that with baseball, they want you to accept and embrace all the good that has ever come from the game, but they would rather tell you that they have no idea who Keybrows is and why doesn't keep getting brought up. So, you know, it's revisionist history when it comes to baseball, and it's one of those things where they really have to kind of decide. You know, and maybe it won't be their decision. Maybe ESPN and, you know, Fox should really force them and be like, hey, listen, you want us to promote you, that's fine, but it's either all on the table, or we're not going to really get into promoting you anymore because it's very hard to have an All-Star game and not discuss Pete Rose. You know, I mean, Pete Rose is, you know, probably in all of history as, like, one of the most celebrated incidents that ever happened in an All-Star game. You know, so, and the fact that you can't even bring it up during an All-Star game is, like, just a debacle. You know, now you have players like Chris Davis telling you that they feel that Roger Maris is still the home run king. There's really a problem with that. Statistically, and history will tell you, that's not necessarily the case. But, again, since baseball refuses to, like, really answer the questions about whether or not, you know, Vaughn's record or McGuire's record are legitimate, we're going to have situations like this.
Well, you know what's funny is, for a sport, and I agree, I think a lot of baseball's marketing is on how the past meshes with the present, and, oh, look, this is the great American pastime with all these numbers and all this, these great moments. They are very, very, very quick to almost want to expunge the last 20 years out of their record books.
I'm sorry,
Randy, go on.
But they don't have the Men in Black tool, guys. They don't have that little Men in Black tool that makes us forget it all. I grew up in it. We all watched it. We all know what happened. So they can't just tell me that it never happened.
I would love to have a neuralizer. I would love to have a neuralizer. Okay? Jose doesn't love to have a neuralizer.
I would love it for a lot of things.
So, but with that being said, real quick, Jose, I want to bring a point. You and I have been talking about the fact that Yankee fans have been spoiled for the last, almost 20 years now. And I forgot the exact phrasing that I used a couple weeks ago. But the Yankees are no longer a dynasty. I think that, you know, you and I both put up the point of saying the Yankees dynasty ended back in 2001. All right? Now, well, they've now been more of a mainstay than they have been a dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're a dynasty in the sense that they've been in the playoffs, like 15 of the last 16 years, or whatever it's been. You know, in that aspect, yes, they're a dynasty. But, you know, they're more like the Braves now than a team that has done anything significant. You know, we got on the Braves because they only won one title in, like, what was it, 15, 16 years of making the playoffs. So, I know the Yankees have won, what is it, five? In probably a similar time frame, but really since 2000, they've only won one. And that was the one in 2009. And as people who hate the Yankees will tell you, almost all of those were, well, not the ones that Torrey was definitely involved in, but, like, there is even some of those now, people would tell you that some of those World Series are tainted with other guys who have connections to steroids or, like, illegal means of, you know, having PEDs or whatever, like the Curtises and guys like that. I mean, so...
Isn't it funny? It's
irrelevant and there's nothing's ever been proven, but...
I think you're right. The problem you have with it is... You're right. From 96 to 01 was a dynasty. I mean, you go to five World Series and you win four of them in 6 years. That's pretty dynastic, if you will. But from 02 to now, was it 2013, that's 11 years, and you've only been to two World Series and you won one. So I agree. You have to separate the two. You cannot just take, because some of these players played this whole time, like Jeter and Pettit and Rivera, played this whole run. You cannot combine the two. You cannot do it because the organizational philosophy changed in 2002. They made very nice moves, smart moves, to trade for Tino Martinez, develop Bernie Williams, Andy Pettit, Derek Jeter, to trade for Jeff Nelson, to... You know, trade for Charlie Hayes, to trade for Cecil Fielder, to trade for Scott Brosius. These are smart baseball moves. In 2002, Brosius, Nelson, Nelson was gone already by then, but Knobloch, Tino, all these guys were gone. In came the big money guys, the Giambis, the Rondell White, the Jose Contreras's, which outside of El Duque, the Yankees have had horrible luck with international players. Arabu, Ogawa, Contreras, they've been terrible. Everything changed. Everything changed then. And it culminated with the A-Rod signing, or A-Rod trade, because that's the biggest of them all. And you're right with all the steroid guys that happen to be on those teams. Now, like I said, I don't care. I'm tired of all this steroid stuff. It's ridiculous. It's annoying. It's just tiring at this point. Nobody cared when it was happening, so we can't have this revisionist theory and this outrage now when nobody gave to you-know-what in 98 when it was happening. Everybody knew Mark McGwire was the size of a WWF wrestler, but nobody cares. Everybody wanted to see him hit home runs. It's like that Simpsons episode. Do you guys want to know the horrible truth, or do you want to see me hit a few dingers? And everybody said dingers. That's what happened. And I think now a certain amount of players have taken, like I think Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez, and somebody else maybe. There's another guy. Who was the other guy that confessed on TV and nobody believed him? McGwire did a couple years later.
There's Palmeiro. Palmeiro came
and
up there.
Palmeiro,
and said, I
Palmeiro
didn't
who just disappeared from the world. He disappeared from the world. He tested positive, and no one ever heard from him again. But those four guys are the quote-unquote steroid era now. No one talks about Andy Pettit, who confessed and said it was purely for injury, coming back from injury, and everybody believed him. When Alex Rodriguez said, I took it for 2 years, and nobody believed him, you know? There's almost a selective thing, like, oh, Andy Pettit's okay because he only did it to come back and help his team. That's okay. But Alex Rodriguez did it because
I think a lot of that is the media that covers him. If Andy Pettit was on any other team, I think there would be an uproar. But because he was on the Yankees and he's considered a quote-unquote good guy, you know, that's why. But, you know, right now, like, as we know, the only guy right now that Major League Baseball really wants to nail, it's not even A-Rod at this point with the steroid crap, it's Ryan Braun. They are so annoyed with that guy that they would sell their soul, and they basically did.
Because they had him. They had him. They tested positive.
Oh, they had him test to rights.
Yeah, they had him test positive, and then they couldn't back it up. They were like, they got off of a technicality.
He got off because the guy collecting the test got to the FedEx store too late and had to keep it in his basement refrigerator over the weekend. I mean,
and Ryan Braun goes out of his way to ruin some poor man's life who he tells everyone that he had a vendetta against him. You don't even know whose specimens those are when they get taken. And I don't want to turn this into a steroid discussion, but when it comes to all this, it's basically, it's Braun and it's A-Rod. And I'll tell you right now, and I'm deadly serious about this. My honest opinion is that if baseball can nail one of them, it's going to be, they want it to be Braun. They want to get Braun so bad they can taste it.
Well, Jose, I want to just, we've sort of fallen away from the topic, but I wanted to just ask you, at the end of the day, Yankees in the playoffs or out of it?
I'm sorry?
Yankees in the playoffs or out of it?
No, I don't think they're going to get in. I don't. I don't think they'll be the last place team in that division, but I don't see them finishing any higher than fourth. I think Toronto is going to be the last place team, and I think they're going to be fourth. I can't see them doing anything because I just think it's going to be one of these years where everyone's going to be hurt. If this quad injury with Jeter, like, lingers, I can see him just getting shut down for the year. What I think is going to have happened with Jeter, he's going to pull a Krzyzewski, where there's a convenient reason for him not to play, and he's not going to play, so he's not going to catch any slack for the bad year because he basically didn't play. And I honestly think that's what's going to end up happening. And the other thing I would say with that, though, if you're the Yankees, you know, what are you going to do when this guy's contract's up? Because I think he only has one more year on the deal. You know, are they going to seriously resign this guy? That's what I got to say about that. But listen, I'll let you guys go. Just wanted to call it real fast, say it, what up. let everyone know I'll be back next week spoiling all your talk show radio fun.
I want to punch you. Can't wait till next week.
All right, guys, have a good night. Have a safe weekend.
See you
later. Cool, because it is disgustingly hot.
Yeah, you too, buddy. Be well.
All right, take care, guys.
See
you. That was the one and only Jose Padilla. Mike, yeah, somehow you ended up in the co-host chair for this show. But you know what? It's good to have you on. You can promote your show a little bit. And, you know, Mike T, I want to let everybody know, Mike T, for a couple weeks in a row, the highest rated show on Back Sports Page Radio Network. I want to transfer over to the NBA real quick. Mike, I know you're a Knicks fan. You're a very big Knicks fan. And you're very adamant about some moves that were made. I have to ask you about the Brooklyn Nets. Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Jason Terry getting traded, introduced to the team.
Did you notice, by the way, that it looked like Garnett and Pierce both had the tan suit with the black shirt, white tie for one of them, and the opposite black white shirt, black tie for the other. And then Jason Terry had like a white suit on with like a blue shirt. So I guess he didn't get the memo.
I noticed it too, but here's the biggest observation I made. I'm trying to figure out what's bothering Paul Pierce the most. Is it the simple fact that he's now a member of the Brooklyn Nets, or is it the simple fact of he is actually on the Nets now? Like, just remember, you know where I'm going with this. The fact that Paul Pierce, the guy who couldn't stand the Nets when his kid was the point guard, the guy who just couldn't stand the Nets, is now wearing their colors.
And isn't it it's the same fan base that chanted, remember in 2002, it was the Boston fans chanting Weissbeater, the Jason Kidd, and it was the Net fans coming back with You Got Stabbed, the Paul Pierce. It was like, which fan base can stoop lower? And now they get to cheer for Paul Pierce. It's really strange. I mean, did the Celtics really think coming back? Here's the one thing I don't understand about it. I understand why the Nets did it, because the Nets, again, last year they tried to usurp power from Big Brother, and it didn't work. They got close, but it didn't work. They lost a Game 7 at home. They got 49 wins, and the Knicks got 54 wins. So even when the Nets made all these moves and all this hoopla coming into Brooklyn, they still finished second to the Knicks. This year, they had to do something. I don't believe for a second that this was basketball-related. I think the Nets saw that Garnett was available, called up the Celtics, and said, hey, listen, are you interested in taking in having Pierce and Garnett off your roster? And when the Celtics said, yeah, you have to take either back one of these bad contracts we've got on the wing, either Terry or Jason or Courtney Lee, I think the Nets were more than willing to do that, because the Nets, more than anything, realized that they need attention grabbers. They need headlines. They need reasons for people to tune into them and not the Knicks. I have a hard time believing that this was strictly a basketball move. I think if you had to rate it, and I'm not, I believe you're probably close to the same boat as I am here, it's got to be at least 70-30 publicity driven, if you ask me. I mean, two guys not well past their prime, but I mean, if you watch Pierce in the playoffs, he was a tenth of the player he usually is. Shumpert locked him down. Garnett got better as that series went on, but I think it was a little bit of, you know, he's not as laterally quick as he used to be, so faster guys are giving him trouble, and he's got to use his abilities down low. He's strictly become a jump shooting. He's become an elbow jump shooter / defensive rebounder. I think that's what he's become, and I think he can still be a 12-10 guy. But I don't know if the Nets wanted him for a 10-12, be a 12-10 guy as much as they wanted to have Kevin Garnett on their team and to have that press conference and to have the most press credentials applied for in franchise history. So that's what I think. I think that's what they wanted more than anything. The basketball is going to come secondary, I think.
You're gonna think that I'm an absolute crazy since I am a Nets fan. I have a hard time with the... this is going to come up so bad. I thought when they hired Jason Kidd as the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, I thought it was the publicity that they needed to take the headlines away from even the Miami Heat winning the NBA championship. With them making this deal, now I thought Jason Kidd would have gotten a pass for being the head coach, never doing this before. Now there's such pressure on them winning. I think it puts more pressure on Lawrence Frank and company. As we welcome in Mike, as we welcome in our good friend of the show, Sarah Gordon. Sarah, hello, good evening, and welcome back to Real Sports Talk Radio. It's been a while since you've been on with us.
Yes, it has. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. We also see Mike from the background. Hello. We have one other caller. Let's see who else is on it. Real Sports Talk Radio. You're on the air with us live. Hello, you're on Real Sports Talk Radio. I guess maybe they're not.
I think I scared them off.
We're talking about Jason Kidd, officially the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, and now with a big trade that put Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Jason Terry in the Nets lineup, challenging the Heat in the Eastern Conference. I was saying before, I thought the attention grabber originally was Kidd becoming the coach. I think now that there's this this level of wanting to win, it becomes, if they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals, this season could be considered a failure.
I'll put up you. I think they have to beat the Heat. That's just my thing. I think they've upped the bar talking about what they've been talking about. I don't think they can just get to in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think they have to beat the Heat.
I don't think they're going to beat the Heat.
I don't think they are either, but I just think they have to.
I'll be honest with you right now. You have to remember one very, very important thing. The Miami Heat were a 3-point shot miss away from possibly breaking up the big three, and LeBron James immediately opting out of his contract.
Well, here's the thing. You're right. And if you notice it, with the Bulls, the third of the three-peat is always the most difficult. Always the most difficult. Because you're playing so many basketball games, and you can talk about the off season. You know, they have July, August, and September before they have to worry about training camp, but they're still playing 82 playoff game regular season games. They're playing another maybe 20 to postseason games, and then you're doing it the next year, and then you got to try and do it again. I mean, you're pulling up close to 400 basketball games in a 3-year span. I don't know if the Heat can do it. But again, does anybody in the East really have that? I mean, Derrick Rose is coming back healthy. That's great. They couldn't beat the Heat with Derrick Rose, and they couldn't beat him without him. The Pacers are getting Danny Granger back. That's great. They couldn't beat the Heat with him. They couldn't beat him without him. The Knicks got Ron Artest. That's great. He's super crazy. J.R. Smith is super crazy. That's a lot of crazy on one team. Can it be good crazy? Sure. But it can very easily be super scary crazy. Like, scary as in Carmelo opts out in January. It's so crazy.
Yeah, but if you have too many that are super crazy, all it's going to do is cause conflict of interest between the players, because they're each going to try to
super crazy things, exactly.
It's not good at all. I mean, I was watching...
I don't know what it is that... Honestly, when people are breaking press conferences on summer league games, I think that sets the bar. To me, that sets the level for crazy.
I think to me, that's more pathetic than anything else. If you're going to try to pull stunts like that, in
it's
my
not a
opinion,
test, anything's possible.
It's bad publicity, especially with the Nets. I'm sorry, Jason Kidd and his DUI has totally screwed the Nets for the next season, because everybody is looking at him instead of the actual team that they're building. Because, I mean, the Nets do have a decent team that they're attempting to build, but they've already shot themselves in the foot by picking Kidd as their head coach. I'm sorry.
I think in that essence you're right, because there's no margin for error with a rookie head coach and a team full of guys that are in win-now mode. I think
exactly.
If the team stayed status quo, I think Kidd could have gotten a pass if they struggled because he's a rookie head coach. Not right now. To me, in hindsight, the signing of Kidd to be the coach makes no sense when you go and then trade half of your team for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, because you have now just raised expectations on a coach that necessarily is not fair, because as great as he was as a player is no guarantee that he's as good as a coach as he was
exactly.
a player. Magic Johnson was a fantastic player, and he was a terrible coach.
I can tell you firsthand, from going from a player to coaching, that first season is insanely rough trying to adjust from how you would perform as a player to how you perform as a coach. Granted, I've never coached anything in the big leagues or anything majorly important. I mean, if you ask my son, what I was coaching was majorly important, because that's in his mind. He's 10. But, I mean, if you ask the fans, they're going to tell you, yeah, we think he was a great player, but half of them are going to be on his side. Well, maybe not half, but he's going to have some players that are going to be okay with trying to give him some leeway. Then you got the players who are going to rag on him from day one. Then you add the fans onto it, and it's going to be, pardon the term, but a whole crap storm on the net. I think they've shot themselves with that.
Well,
and
really,
I
I'm sorry, Mike.
I know you want to get in on this Nets talk, Randy. I know you do. But if the Nets got rid of Avery Johnson after, what was it, 20... It was 17-17 or 14-14, something like that. What if Jason Kidd gets off to a 21-20 start halfway through the year? They've already set precedent that with semi-raised expectations, they fired a coach. Now with, like, through-the-roof expectations, if this team is meandering around 500, I mean, does Kidd get a pass? And if so, that's a pretty big double standard, considering they really fired Avery Johnson before he got going. And PJ basically took the same players and changed nothing and got them to play well. So I don't know what they're doing. I don't think hiring an inexperienced coach with a totally nothing but experienced roster is really smart, because, A, you're setting them up to fail if the team doesn't do well. B, you're wasting basically the only year that these guys probably have together with a coach that he may be good, he may not be good. That's a pretty big question mark to have a coach on a team that wants to beat the Heat and win a championship.
Well, I'm gonna ask you this question. I'm going to ask you both this question. And I think it's pretty accurate. Out of these other five teams, the other four teams in the Eastern Conference that were battling for the top spot, you tell me who the Nets are better than.
None.
They tell me the Nets are better than the Knicks.
No,
no,
definitely not.
That's the one I seem to disagree with. I think the Knicks got worse. They didn't help their cause in some of these moves there in the offseason.
How did the Knicks get worse, though?
I didn't think it was possible.
I mean, you added crazy. I'll give you that. You added insanity. But if Artest plays like he's capable of playing it, and last year his PER was really, really good against power forwards and small forwards, if he plays like he can play and actually does everything he says he wants to do, which is just be a complimentary guy and help the team win, I don't see how you can't be better, because he now gives you, with him and Shumpert, two really, really good defenders. Like, really good defenders. Forget Bargnani's defense. Because Bargnani's here to do one thing and one thing only. They don't need him to grab 10 rebounds. They don't need him to block 5 shots. They need him to get 12 to 15 points per game and be a guy that stretches the floor when he's on the court with Carmelo Anthony and creates space in the paint. Because the one reason why they lost to the Pacers was because Carmelo was driving against two guys in Weston Hibbert that had no reason to be outside of the paint. because of Kenyon Martin being on the court, or what was what people used to call Amari Stoudemire on the court, and what Tyson Chandler, what half of Tyson Chandler was on the court. Wanyama is healthy, and that's, I will give you that. That's a big question mark. Stretches the floor because he can at least shoot the three, and if Hibbert's a half a step out of that paint, he doesn't block that dunk, and they probably go to a game seven. So, honestly, you gave up two guys that did nothing for you in the playoffs and really probably weren't going to be part of your rotation for a guy that, if he's healthy, can be a very valuable contributor. Add in Artest and his defensive potential. Add in Tim Hardaway and his potential as a guard. I don't know how this team got worse. I just don't see how. When they actually, stored up some holes in their rotation that they were giving to Steve Novak and to guys like, Novak and Rasheed Wallace. They've taken that clump of stuff that was getting 10 to 12 minutes a game, and they put in guys that can actually play basketball and do multiple things, not just stand in a corner and only shoot a three-pointer if there's nobody in front of you for 5 feet.
Now, I'm going to throw this at you, Mike. I do think that the Nets are making a huge gamble with Garnett and Pierce and,
Jason Terry.
It's a big gamble, which can pay off big or it can blow up in their face. I think the one team that everyone seems to be forgetting about, and I love the small moves that they're making, are the Chicago Bulls. I love the move to Mike Dunleavy playing there. He's a good shooter. He can bring something a little extra to the table. He can spread the floor for them. They're getting Derrick Rose back, and it looks like they're going to try and re-sign Nate Robinson as well to be like a extra combo guard to be on the court with the second unit.
I've got a question for you, Randy.
Sure.
Bulls, who is their leader on the court? They don't have someone to be that person.
Noah.
Really?
Noah led that team in the playoffs on one leg last year, and they're getting a healthy Derrick Rose back this year. So, and they were able to push Miami. They only won one game against Miami. I thought if Thibodeau would have, and Michael, I wonder if you agree with me on this. If Thibodeau would have not been so stubborn and put Hamilton in game three, that game three was close against Miami, but they might have been able to steal one against them because they almost stole game five. Game four was a little bit of a total blowout, and so was game two. They were in
completely.
It for game three, and Hamilton played excellent in games, played excellent for the limited time he played in game four, and he played great in game five.
Why did they play more then if he was so great?
Because once you hit in Thibodeau's doghouse,
the only thing I would say is
he's difficult.
That same argument can be made as to why did Mike Woodson not play Chris Copeland until when he did. You know, it's revisionist theory. I agree if Hamilton played, but he played in game five in the minutes he gave them. Maybe if he played that early in the year, maybe they win. The one thing I'll say about this is the Bulls have done a terrible, terrible job of trying to find that complimentary shooter for Derrick Rose. It was Korver and Ronnie Brewer. That didn't work. Then it was Bellinelli and it was supposed to be Rip Hamilton. That didn't work. Now it's Dunleavy, and I don't even know who's going to play shooting guard for them this year. I mean, they will be smart to put Jimmy Butler there, but I don't think they're going to be there.
They're working on getting Vince Carter, who you know can give them help.
I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. The Bulls had more heart than the Nets did in round one.
Yes, and the Bulls will have more heart than almost every team in the Eastern Conference because their coach demands it, and I don't think Noah wants to be the leader of the team. I think he wants to just be the energy guy, and I think they really think in that locker room of Derrick Rose as the leader. But I would agree with you that Noah is their heart. He's their absolute heart and soul of that team. He's the Charles Oakley of their team. Now, whether or not that's warranted, I don't know, but I think they only go as Noah goes because Rose, it's funny, Noah doesn't want to be that, and they want Derrick Rose to do it. Derrick Rose doesn't want to be it, and I think, if they swap personalities, it would fit the natural order of things better. Rose is the MVP star, and he should maybe act like Noah. Noah is the double-double, hardworking guy that would probably be better suited having Rose's demeanor. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of like they're, it's like a Freaky Friday thing, and they're trapped in other people's bodies. The natural order of things would lead you to believe that Noah's personality would be the more fiery to Derrick Rose, for Derrick Rose. You know, the Jordan type, the obvious Kobe Bryant type. You know, he doesn't have that, and I think some people take that the wrong way and look at Noah as the leader. You know, Noah's to me nothing more than their heart. He can't be the guy that goes and leads the team out and be their leader because he's limited offensively. He's a good rebounder and a solid defender. He's kind of like Tyson Chandler in a way, with a little bit better offensive game because he can shoot that tornado thingy. No, I'm good. I was rambling at that point.
Yeah, but if you look at it, one way, as Noah is being is the expected leader, if that's the case, you know, if he's the best that they got, then they absolutely have no chance of making it to beat, like, the Miami Heat again. I mean, they could not do it. And if you're going to rely on somebody like Noah, they're never going to be able to do it.
Oh, I agree completely. Their problem is they're way too predictable offensively for good defensive teams. The Heat, the last couple of years, have been able to just suffocate. You know, they did it in the East Finals by basically putting LeBron on Rose and saying, hey, we know you have nobody else that can create their own shots, so there's no way we're letting Derrick Rose get things going. And the Bulls completely fell apart in the next four games.
Exactly.
Last year, Rose was out, and the Bulls still had nobody that could score. The Bulls' problem is always going to be what the Knicks had in the 90s. They have no ability to get a consistent second scorer, and they rely on their defense and their star players to do just enough that gets them over the top. Unfortunately, the Bulls are probably, based on effort and defense, probably going to always be that second or third seed in the Eastern Conference. They're never, ever going to get past the Heat or whoever is in the number one seed in the Eastern Conference because of that problem.
Exactly.
And it's a problem that they've now had 3 years to try and figure out. And the best they can come up with is continuing to get these 6'7" white three-point shooters and thinking that that's going to solve everything.
Well, it's
now,
like
Korver, Bellinelli,
Cowboy,
and Dunleavy. That's what they seem to keep doing. And then the first two didn't work. I don't know why Dunleavy would work because Dunleavy does the same thing. Dunleavy does
Dallas
the exact
Cowboys
same thing those two
white
do. Exactly. He's big and white.
Until you get rid of Noah, it's like the Dallas Cowboys having Tony Romo. They're going to get to the playoffs, but that's it. They're never going to be a championship team.
They had those rumors around the draft that LaMarcus Aldridge wanted out of Portland, and then he said he didn't. But then people kept saying, no, he really does want out of Portland, and he wants to go to the Bulls. But the Blazers want Noah, and the Bulls said no. I think that's really, really dumb. If that's true and that actually happened, that's really, really dumb on Chicago's part because as great as Noah is, Aldridge is everything that they're missing. He's a pick-and-roll pick that's 6'11 and can shoot jump shots and take the pressure off of Derrick Rose. That's everything that they're missing in a second player that they've been trying desperately to find. And if they really did say no to that based on this idea that Joakim Noah is anything more than a first-team or second-team all-defense player and really nothing more than that, then that's a really bad move on their part. Really bad.
Okay, guys, real quick, because we're running short on time, we're down here to about the final 60 seconds. I want to just bring this one point up to both of you, and I want to see what you guys feel. Mike, you're a Giants fan. Sorry, you're a Cowboy fan. Anything wrong with the Victor Cruz comment of him complaining about his contract? Go.
You know, I didn't
Cruz
hear about
whiny.
It.
He's just whiny. That's all it comes down to. He thinks he's better than he is. Did he make some awesome plays to help the Giants to get them to the Super Bowl? Perhaps. But I don't know. I don't see him as being this phenomenal player where he should get what he thinks he deserves at all.
You know, I didn't hear about it until I think it was Monday. Monday, the first I heard about it, I think someone had texted me during the weekend about, wow, what a dumb thing for Cruz to say. And apparently there were a lot of dumb things Cruz said over the weekend that I didn't see until Monday.
It's
his tweet about George Zimmerman or this. He had a really bad weekend if you think about it.
He's not very smart.
No.
He may be a nice
someone
guy,
said, you
but
can
he's
take
not
the kid out
bright.
Of Patterson, but you can't take the Patterson out of the kid. And it's
exactly.
true. Sometimes that happens where kids that grow up in the States, they don't have that filter to say, oh, geez, I shouldn't have said that, until afterwards.
It's
and then you can't
syndrome.
Escape it because it's out there. I will agree with you on this one point, though. Cruz is not their best wide receiver. If Akeem Nicks is healthy, he's their number one.
Exactly.
And if no one believes me, just watch what Akeem Nicks makes this year if he stays healthy. And that's, it's a problem he's had literally his whole career. He's not played. He's been dinged up every year he's been in the league. But if he's healthy, like Michael Irvin said last year, slot receivers don't make the money. You make your money on the outside. That's where all the big-time receivers are. Those were the Irvins, the Andre Reeds, the Chris Carters, the Randy Mosses, those are where all the Hall of Fame, the big-time receivers are. Victor Cruz doesn't play on the outside. He may in two wide receiver sets, but when the Giants go to sub-packages and all that, Victor Cruz goes into the slot. The team mix is always on the outside. So if people think Victor Cruz is the Giants' best receiver, they're mistaken. Is Victor Cruz good? Yes. Is Victor Cruz the product of the offense and the quarterback he plays with? Probably, because last year, Akeem Nicks was hurt the whole year, and the team went nowhere. The year before, Nicks was actually healthy, and they went to the Super Bowl. And if you look at the stats in the playoffs, who was making all the big plays? The touchdowns, the Hail Mary catch in Green Bay, the 11 catches in the Super Bowl. It was Akeem Nicks, not Victor Cruz.
Mike and Sarah, I want to throw a couple different things at you here. We're in overtime. We're sort of recording now, so you know I'll find a way to hype this into something a little bit bigger than.
Is this a sudden death overtime, or is this like the NBA 5-minute overtime? What's the rules on
this?
This
is more of the like you know we can have as much time as we want now, and not feeling really rushed.
Huh. It's like an NFL playoff overtime.
I'm a little confused right now with. A stat that I heard, and it's not even an on-the-field stat from the NFL. Correct me if I'm wrong. The number is now 20. Is it 28 or 32 players have been arrested since the Super Bowl?
I think your number is the higher of the two because I think it was I thought it was over 20 before OTAs. So I may be mistaken, but I thought the number is higher than that now. So I would assume it was closer to 32.
How many of them have been fatalities caused by other players?
Well, I think a lot of them has more have been DUIs, weapon possession. Only one, Aaron Hernandez, being the one for, you know, being tried for murder. I think that what we have to sort of like understand, too, the NFL is different from any other sport. One of the reasons why you're not hearing, you hear NBA players get in trouble, and of course, Major League Baseball with the steroid issue. But one of the reasons why NFL seems to have a lot of problems with discipline with their players is because their games are once a week. And they have a lot of dead time during the week because they go to practice during the day. They don't leave to go to this, it's an away game. They don't leave to go, they don't leave to go until Thursday night, Thursday night or Friday. I think it's even like that. I think they leave at least Friday or Saturday for an away game. So, for example, the Giants are going out to play the Cowboys, and it's a Sunday game. They don't leave to head out there until Friday night or Saturday morning. So, I want to also go over one very, very important thing. We were talking about the NFL with scheduling and quarterback. We were originally going to have Bobby Blackjack from I-95 Radio on, sort of lost track of time. With our show tonight, we were discussing. You know, Sarah and I had this conversation last year. Blank, I think you jumped in. Jose, of course, jumped in also too. We've had the quarterback controversy. Jaws is doing his quarterback countdown on ESPN, and a conversation that I heard with Dave Rothenberg on ESPN Radio New York on my way home is who's better quarterback than is Eli or Peyton? I think the conversation, I think Peyton is the more marketable, more fun quarterback out there. But I think when it comes back to who do you want to have the ball in their hand in the clutch time in the fourth quarter, I think Eli's the guy. And
no.
Mike, I wanted to get your take, and then we'll get Sarah's take. I know Sarah's going to go with it. But Mike, I want to go with you on this first.
I don't think that Eli's better than Aaron Rodgers. I don't think that Eli's better than Tom Brady. I don't think right now that Eli's better than Peyton. I don't think he's better than Drew Brees. I will tell you this. I don't think there's a quarterback that has shown in the big games that he's up to it, I think, better than Eli. He's led two Super Bowl winning drives, both against the same team, which is weird. I mean, Brady's done it, though. Peyton did it to win the AFC title in 06. You know, other quarterbacks have done it. Now, I think sometimes people rag on Eli because he's very inconsistent in terms of, I think he's too, I don't know what the word is really. I think he's adverse to sacks, like the plague, which is okay sometimes. But I think sometimes he maybe tries to trust his arm too much and fit it into a really tight window instead of maybe taking a sack in the second quarter of a game in October against the Steelers that really has no implications in any way, shape, or form into anything you may do in December. But I think when the money's on the table, I think he performs as well as any quarterback in the league. But I think over the long haul, I think the numbers that some of the guys put up, like Rodgers and Brees, are downright silly. I mean, the season Aaron Rodgers had last year was absolutely, like, cartoonish. The season Brady had in 07 was ridiculous. So, in that aspect, I think he's perfect where he is. I think Joe's had him at, what, 8? I think he's a top 10 quarterback in the league. He's won 2 Super Bowls. I think he's better than Roethlisberger. I think he's better than Rivers. I think he showed you that he's the better quarterback in that draft class. But no, I don't think he's the best quarterback in the league. But I think when like I said, when the money's on the table, he's as good as any quarterback in the league.
And you're a Giants fan, you said that?
Oh, listen, Eli's the best quarterback I've ever seen. And I had to deal with Kerry Collins and Dave Brown. So, yeah, Eli Manning looks like Dave. Freaking Joe Montana.
No. Joe Montana was actually decent looking when he took the helmet off.
Oh, well,
when
I mean,
Eli takes his helmet off, he looks goofy. He looks like he should be on like a Saturday Night Live sketch where they're busting on somebody.
He was
other
on Saturday
that,
Night Live too. What
yeah, but
craziness.
I mean, you know, when they get all dressed up to look goofy.
Too.
Yeah, well, he's embarrassing. He embarrasses himself on a regular basis. But, well, that's just because I'm not a fan of Eli. So
I'm gonna throw this question to both of you. I'll give you mine third. I'm gonna give you I'll let Sarah go first, and Mike, then me. Give me your top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
Spot again? You
yeah,
did this to me last
part.
Time.
And this is part of my job, and this is the beautiful part about sitting in the host chair and being able to control the board. This is where I get my ego gets to play the best of me. I get them to make these types of decisions. So guess what? You go first, then Michael go. And I want you to grade it again, not just by, you know, the regular, get them to do a full body of work. Top 5.
You really think I can remember that much information?
Oh, yeah.
No.
I think everybody can. I think if you really put your mind and heart to it, you can do absolutely anything.
I have to keep more memory space for my son so that way I can remember what he's got to do for school so I can help him with his homework and not sound like a putz. All right, so top five. Does it have to be in any order, or can it just be the people that I think are?
Michael, 5-1. I think they have to be in order, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's got to go 5-1.
Oh, my God, you people are ridiculous. Putting me on the spot. You're driving me up. Absolutely nuts. All right, let's see. Number five. Oh, I can't think of his name. The quarterback for the Ravens, Flacco, right?
Flacco.
Okay. Number four, I say Roethlisberger. Three, let's see, number three, Drew Brees. Number two, Tom Brady. Number one, Peyton Manning. There you go. That's my top five. In order.
Mr. Tramatazzi.
Jamarcus Russell. No, I'm just playing. I would probably say it would go... I think five would be... Now I'm struggling because I'm like they're really going to be listening to this and they're going to get offended. Like, Peyton Manning's going to be really mad at me tomorrow when he hears this. But I think Peyton's five. I think Brady is... No, Brady's not four. That's too low for Brady. Breeze is four. Wow, I really jumped this too early. I definitely skipped some people. I know Rodgers is one. Let's just leave it at that. Rodgers is one and Breeze is two. How about that?
I have to do all top five. You've got to do it too. Don't try to cut
fine.
Off.
Fine.
Not possible.
Fine.
I'll not let you off the hook.
Then we'll do it this way. I don't think Flacco's five. See, the problem is a lot of people want to talk about Luck and Griffin and Wilson and Kaepernick. They're nowhere near it yet. They still have to win. Exactly. They're nowhere near yet, but people want to put them up there, and it's crazy.
They're good. They need more time.
I like what I saw last year, but I need to see more.
It's comparing apples to oranges. Half the guys, like the guys that I mentioned, have been playing at least 5 years plus. So you can't compare somebody that's a veteran to a rookie. A rookie
may not have a great season. Listen,
but
Griffin and Luck are young guys. Russell Wilson also, they played great last season. I'm not convinced anything about RG3, especially with coming up the type of knee surgery he's going to have. The reality of it is, like she just said, 5 years. 5 years in league.
I think that's a good number. I think you have a pretty good idea on players at that point.
This is a bad conversation because
there's a lot of bad quarterbacks in the league.
There's a lot of people that are in that
5-10 range that you can be completely interchangeable. Like, you can say Flacco and Roethlisberger at 5-4, and you can put Eli and Flacco at 5-4, and nobody would have any complaints with that because they're all pretty much in that next tier. I think there's only really four top-flight quarterbacks that are like Madden NFL quarterbacks. Let's put it that way. Like video game guys, I put up video game numbers. Manning, Breeze, Rodgers, and Brady. When you get to four, or when you get to five, you have basically anybody from Roethlisberger, Eli, Flacco, even guys like Dalton. Then Dalton comes into that play. You can bring in the young kids. You can bring in guys like Cutler. You can bring in guys like Rivers.
Cutler's not in this conversation.
Yeah, but if you're going past five, like if you're going through the top ten, then you're putting in people.
I think five is only reserved for Eli Flacco or Roethlisberger. Of that whole group, those are the only guys that have won Super Bowls. So I think you can't obviously be ahead of those three if you're Matthew Stafford. even though you may currently get paid more than them.
Which is nuts.
Just wait until Aaron Rodgers got paid. Then somehow Matthew Stafford got above him. Now, I don't even know who's next in line. Flacco was in between the two of them. Then, I think Roethlisberger is next. Somebody's next, and it's just going to keep going and going until quarterbacks are apparently making $300 million for one game.
All right, then I'm
force Timothy to play football. Jeez.
Yeah.
Well,
I thought baseball players were making enough. I guess I got to stop pushing them towards baseball. Soccer.
Why, that's guaranteed.
It was much safer to play baseball.
Oh, I don't know. He's already had injuries, and he's only 10. He's already been hit with a pitch 3 times, 4 times, something like that.
Baseball is guaranteed money, so you have to look at it like that, whether they get hurt or not. All right, real quick, because we're against the clock, and 15 minutes of overtime is usually all you really do get. Mine is very, very simple. Number I put number one. Brady is the man until he's got Super Bowl rings to back that up. And I don't think you can really make that argument. We all know I look at consistency, and I always say that Aaron Rodgers is a very, very, very good quarterback. We keep grading him on potential. Yes, he had an MVP season, and last year he had to throw the ball because he had no running game. So he had to throw the ball, so his interceptions went up. I'm being honest with you. Rodgers is, remember, I'm looking at the whole body of work of everything they've done. I still put Peyton number two because he's established. Number three, he loves Drew Brees. I love Drew Brees. I think he's great. Aaron Rodgers is four. And like you said, you can start making the conversation with Super Bowl rings and where people rank. You can't ignore what Eli did the year they won the Super Bowl with all the comeback victories and even the first part of last season. He's got two rings under his belt, and they wouldn't have won those rings without him. So I have to put Eli five. I really do think this is a conversation that can go on and on and on. And over the next 2 weeks, that's going to happen. Real quick, Real Sports Talk Radio live every Friday night from 9:30 to 11 with your hosts, both me, Randy Zellia, and Jose Padilla. Mike Tremontazzi and Sarah Gordon Boyd joining us tonight, helping fill in for Jose, who's got really big shoes to fill. Not because he's really that good, he just wears really big shoes. And with that being said, next week on the show, we do have Chris Canty from the Baltimore Ravens, nice enough to join us for a few minutes. Also, with Monday Morning Hangover, our new fantasy football show, which is broadcasting live every Thursday, not next week, the week after, Maurice Jones-Drew will be on with them talking NFL football. So the NFL star power is coming over to Back Sports page. And also, next week on Real Sports Talk Radio, a great NBA guest, Hall of Famer Dominique Wilkins, will be on the show with us live. So we got your star power. To both of you, I say thank you. I appreciate it. This will be all in the extra parts, so we're going to be promoting the crap out of this overtime session. Great conversation. Appreciate both of you guys coming on. For Randy Zellia, Sarah Gordon, Mike Tremontazzi, MaxSportsPage.com. We'll see you next week.